Oh, hey there. I'm Guy Branum, and welcome to Pop Rocket, a weekly show picking over all the pop culture we love to love. With me to talk TV, film, music, and anything else entertaining are digital strategist Winter Mitchell.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello. I'm trying to get our beloved producer, Colin, to come in and be on the show because he is British, and we were talking about a British thing, but he refused. He refused to break through the boundary between producing and being on podcasts.
Wow.
So instead, we have special guest, British writer, actor, and broadcaster, Jamila Jamil.
Hello.
Hello, Jamila.
Hi.
What should people at home know about you?
Oh, God. I like cake. That's it.
The band?
Just the food.
I'm a big fan of cake. A lot of people
are cake and spooning.
Strong pie partisans. Hate spooning.
Love it.
I enjoy having sex with people and then leaving to go sleep somewhere else.
Me too.
in
my bed.
And another Brit, he's an actor. You've seen him on episodes and at my regular role-playing game. It's Humphrey Kerr.
Hello. It's Carr.
Carr.
It's spelt very strangely.
You're posh as fuck, Humphrey.
Yes, I am, Guy.
Wait,
correct.
Can we find out which areas they're from so we understand?
Sure.
Where in your tiny country are you from?
I'm from Berkshire, which is, if you think of it, like Lannisport in Game of Thrones.
Uh-huh.
Where all sort of rich white people live.
Okay. Jamila, what about you?
London. So sort of West Hollywood vibes.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
So coming up on this week's show, we're going to be Her Majesty the Queen, by the grace of God of Great Britain, the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, is turning 90 this week, and we thought we would take a step back and look at one of the greatest pop culture figures of all time, Queen Elizabeth II. Plus, we'll be sharing our latest gems, but first, let's find out what arts and entertainment news or event have got our attention this week. Winter Mitchell, what are you all about this week?
Coachella. I went. I've been going to Coachella since I was 22. I am 36 now. I'm very comfortable saying that I can't do it. I can't really do the entirety of it
it's
anymore.
It's dehydrating.
Somebody stepped on my ankle. You know, I love most of the main acts. I really couldn't do Sahara Tent anymore. I didn't even venture over that way. But I wanted to sort of talk about the innovations that popped up, because we can talk about who was great and who wasn't great. Who was great? Guns N' Roses. People will disagree. I say go fuck yourself. They were amazing. Ice Cube was great. LCD Sound System was fantastic. But there were a lot of cool things that happened there that really made me feel old. And it wasn't all the kids doing Molly. It was the innovations that they've created to sort of make life easier, even though it made everything absolutely terrible.
Like what?
Drones.
Oh, really?
There were so many drones during performances that it was absolutely distracting.
Taking
Why?
Photos or, like, getting people a juice? Yeah.
I wish it was getting me a fucking juice. It was taking photos, taking video. Calvin Harris had, like, a humongous drone during his set.
Taylor Swift. Boom.
Boom.
Bit of fun.
Calvin actually said that when he took a picture of the crowd with this drone, it was just about 10,000 people taking pictures of themselves.
Yes, exactly.
That's terrifying.
Which brings me to the next part, honestly, and I spoke to five artists, two of them headliners, who said the crowd was an absolute nightmare.
Yeah.
I felt the energy at some point, but not in a continuous energy. It was one of those things where I was sitting there and I was watching Guns N' Roses. I'm stoked. I've never seen Guns N' Roses live. I've loved them since I was 9 years old. I'm ready. Like, I'm fucking ready to see them. And as soon as they put that first strum of Welcome to the Jungle, it wasn't like, yeah, I was the only one going, yeah, like the totally like lost my voice. Every single fucktard there puts their camera up. And I took a picture of that and I'm contributing to the problem. But I had to show people this is shit needs to stop.
Winter.
Like, it kills it.
Winter, tell me about the important Coachella fashions that you saw. Also, for everyone at home, Winter has Coachella hair and it's really exciting.
Oh, the Coachella hair was so I would never be forced to wear a flower crown. And if you put one on my head, you'd be fucked up. Listen, a lot of Guns N' Roses shirts, even though I predicted that would be a thing. And I said, that's really janky. Didn't see as many ass cheeks as I would have thought. Lots of shirtless men.
Is that because everyone's so thin that they don't have ass cheeks?
There's a case for that. You know, fashion is...
How much yarn work?
Interesting bringing that up. There's a lot of yarn work.
Yeah.
A lot of yarn work. A lot of different multicolored hairdos. A lot of eggshell, ecru.
Oh.
Like, yeah. Like, so we're not going to go wild and vivid. We're going to go like something like your mom's china.
Compelling. Any other pieces of technology or... things.
Apple Pay, you know, you could pay at the bar, which was very important. They've been long standing having that wristband to the gate situation. So you can just walk right in, walk right out, and you can't really exchange bracelets. And then the spatial audio thing they had for virtual reality. I don't know why that's really stupid, why you'd need virtual reality and spatial audio when you're at the fucking festival. But I think that we've reached peak Coachella. So, and I'm not saying that because I'm 36. We've definitely reached peak Coachella.
Did Bernie summon any birds?
He opened for Run the Jewels.
I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Jamila, what are you all about this week?
I'd like to talk about Chris Brown allegedly being rapey again.
Okay. That's shocking to all of us.
I know. It's so weird because he's such a good guy. And it's so justified that he would still have a career, isn't it? I'm so happy for him.
No, Jamila, be honest. Be sincere with our audience.
Oh,
what happened?
Such a bastard. Okay, so Best Coast singer, Bethany Constantino. So she has, she's called him out because he's got some lyrics that I'm about to read to you now. The song is called, it's called Fuck You Back to Sleep and contains lines such as, just let me rock, fuck you back to sleep, girl. Don't say a word, no. Girl, don't you talk. Just hold on tight to me, girl. Fuck you back to sleep, girl. And rock you back. Now, I hate him, and I would naturally assume that he probably means the worst connotation of those lyrics, but I don't actually think that he is trying to perpetuate rape culture, which is what the Best Coast lead singer thinks. Mm-hmm. I think he's admitting that he's so boring in bed that when he fucks you, you will just fall asleep.
I disagree. I think he picks stupid hoes who talk too much because all he does is date girls who think that he's everything, mm-hmm. and then they want everything on top of that from him because they're mm-hmm. so obsessed with him and they don't understand that the man is a domestic abuser.
He's a monster.
A monster.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't want to get into all that. Nah. I'm going to just fuck you back to sleep.
I think fuck you back to sleep sounds like he is just like, you know, just going at it like,
There is something really interesting about the fact that, like, Donald Trump has sort of, like, pioneered this path of, like, being unrepentant and in a world that has gotten very judgmental about a lot of things, like, you know, raping and beating up people. Mm-hmm.
Justifiably so, some would say.
That, some sense in bloody America.
That Chris Brown could just be taking this tactic of, oh, like, they're always just going, like, if I'm going to be a byword for domestic violence, I might as well just lean into it and be that guy.
Wow. He's lucky he has a fucking career. Period.
Yeah.
End of story. All motherfucking day.
It's a crime against humanity.
It is 100%
that he has a career.
It's ridiculous.
I think Julius Caesar put it right when he said, I'd rather be a king in a village than the second man in Rome. And so Chris Brown would rather be the king of rape than the second man of not rape.
Robin Thicke, R. Kelly, all of those men, they just beat around the bush.
Yeah.
They do.
No pun intended.
At least he is owning what his brand is.
Oh, yeah.
So, it's a dreadful brand.
So, but you don't think that this is bullshit. You just think he was very stupid.
I just think he's too much of a fucking idiot to even come up with an innuendo.
Yeah.
I actually don't even know if he... No, he's not a smart man. Mm-hmm. It's amazing that he even actually is still alive, how he's managed to just survive day to day.
It's so shocking.
Like, shoelaces.
Amazing people die every day.
This amazes me. Like, he bathes himself, he gets to work safely. It's a phenomenon.
He buys houses and puts down loans. He extracts bank loans.
Maybe he's become my hero.
We don't know. Yeah. A carer may drive him to the studio.
Humphrey, what are you all about this week?
I'm very excited about the furore surrounding Michael Strahan leaving Live with Kelly and Michael.
I mean, isn't
and
it
moving to
fabulous?
America.
Oh.
All right, Humphrey, what is your relationship with morning television?
My relationship with morning television is I'm a largely unemployed actor, so I spend a lot of time watching it. And when
cheaper
I first
than porn.
Came over here, it is cheaper than porn, and there's just as many vacant expressions on this list.
Kelly's upper arms are great.
I love Kelly and Michael. I'm not going to lie to you. I genuinely, unironically enjoy
the fact that that motherfucking show has been able to take the lightning in a bottle that was Regis and Kathy Lee and be able to hand it off two fucking times and find people as likable and breezy as the two originals.
It's incredible.
Stunning.
It's incredible. It's the axe. If you change the handle and keep the blade, is it still the same axe? They've done that to the blade and the handle,
right?
And it's better than ever. However, What really excites me about this is the fact that just that it's front page news of everything. I opened up my CNN app this morning and the first top thing was Michael Strahan to leave Live with Kelly Michael and move to GMA.
And have you heard how pissy she's been?
She didn't turn up to work today.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, she's not coming back until he's gone.
Gelman's lost all control. Also, I love... I love when a man gets pulled into that level of cold pissiness. Like when you hear that two people aren't talking to each other on The View, it's like, yeah, that shit happens. But like when it's a man,
this is war.
It's better than when it's happening on The Good Wife.
Okay, but here's the thing. I'm sorry, but he did what he had to do.
He's brilliant.
But why?
He did what he had to do.
Why leave Live? I mean, it's a super fun job. Why? What's the advantage of going to
money?
GMA? Oh, it's more money?
Sweet,
I think it's definitely more money.
And I got to be honest with you. GMA is an international. It's an international. What did you call
brand?
It? Brand. Yes. You go all over. Yes, my dear. You go all over the world when you're with GMA. You're talking about a morning news show that is. You know,
but
you cover breaking news.
I'm sorry. Slide up to the studio at 8:30 in the morning.
Sure.
Get some powder. Oh. Chit chat and have coffee. Done by noon, go off and have your life.
I would feel empty. Honestly, also, I would feel empty in life if that was all I was doing
for my life. When you say news, do you mean someone says, have you ever been in snow, Robin?
No.
Yes, I have.
No.
Where in the World in Matt Lauer is a good bit, and you will have respect for that.
No, I have no respect for it.
I'd like to introduce the idea that perhaps, judging by the way that she's handled this whole situation, maybe Kelly Reaper's a bitch.
No. I've heard nothing but amazing things about
her.
And by the way, I think she's butthurt. And by the way, I don't blame him for doing what he had to do.
She was real good on Broad City.
They were both brilliant. They were both so charming.
Yeah, but so was Hillary Clinton.
He was fucking good in Magic Mike 2. XXL.
Yes.
He's hot as fuck.
They're both brilliant, and it's a shame they've been broken
up. He's a handsome man.
When people, you don't want...
Go to GMA, they're all
everyone's
duds.
Everyone's very upset
to fight.
Today.
Such duds.
All right, so it's been a gigantic week for me. Took down The Boss, took down all of Kimmy Schmidt. Both of them were good. I enjoyed both of them. But the thing I am all about this week are those last two episodes of Girls.
Oh, shit!
Yes.
Ooh.
It makes you realize how smart that show was to start her off as such a mess and to take you through so much so that that tiny little triumph, but feeling so real, could just resonate and course through you. Like, looking at absolutely everyone on that show in the midst of the chaos that they have created for themselves and realizing that Hannah may have a little bit figured out the path that she should be on was, like, really smart. It felt so earned. And Jenny Slate was a delightful creature. And I realized,
love her.
Are any of you guys familiar with the concept of schmuck bait?
Yes.
No.
Okay. When you're writing a sitcom, or I guess any TV show, but I've only written on sitcoms, anything that you are pitching as a possibility that we all know couldn't happen is schmuck bait. On Awkward, when we talked about a pregnancy scare, that was where I learned the word. It's schmuck bait. Jen is not going to be pregnant on this show. And I realized that Girls has created a world where there is no schmuck bait. There's absolutely nothing that could happen that you wouldn't completely buy. Well, fuck yeah, they'd do that to her. You know.
That's true.
Yeah. It's a world of infinite possibilities, and it really changes the tone and texture of the sitcom. Jamila, watching a show of terrible white American girls.
Yes.
Is it interesting for you as a train wreck, or is it just complete? Is it?
Are you calling me a train wreck?
Yeah, so that did come across as seeing as how you're a train.
I've only been here for like 5 minutes.
No, I'm
guys very perceptive.
I'm saying the TV show Girls. Like, is it a shit show to you, or is it a delightful shit show?
No, I find it fascinating. I find it completely intriguing, and also, you know what? Because it's New York and London are not that far apart.
Yeah.
Like, that's what girls are like in London quite a lot. Slightly less self-indulgent, perhaps. But I think it's a very well-written show, and I think it's captivating.
Winner, thoughts?
I just have to give off this quote that she says during her moth piece, because this made me cry. And I didn't know that it was ever going to be possible for Girls to make me cry in 2016. She says, "I could do what my instinct is, which is run around and destroy things and scream and try to throw myself in front of a van to make a point. But end of the day, that would be just me fulfilling all of their expectations of me, and I would love to surprise someone sometimes. Never has something so poetically been more timed perfectly to how I feel, to how the world feels like, and that was just absolutely just pitch fucking perfect.
Also, representations of stand-up or storytelling in anything
that was true
are always like chilling to me, and that felt like a real performance.
Yes,
and a good performance and an earned performance.
We wanted her. You thought that she wasn't going to do as great.
Yes,
and then she fucking kills it.
Humphrey, do you or your wife watch Girls?
What is this, that Tina Fey show about the ginger lady?
No, it is not the Tina Fey show about the ginger lady.
I know what it is. No, we don't. My wife doesn't.
You were
care
breezily
for it.
Acting unaware of a piece of popular culture to make it seem like you were cool.
That was schmuck bait.
No, you're being a
everyone
dick.
Come on now. No, I know what it is. I just ain't seen it.
All right, you guys are listening to Pop Rocket. We'll be right back to talk about Her Royal Majesty after this.
New to Maximum Fun, the Beef and Dairy Network podcast, the number one podcast for those involved or just interested in the production of beef animals and dairy herds. All sponsored by Grazex, the latest grass replacement pellet from Mitchell's. If it's not Mitchell's, get back in the truck. Find us at MaximumFun.org or on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast from. And if it's not clear, this is a comedy podcast. Beef out.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Jamila Jamil.
Humphrey Carr.
And this week, we have foreigners in the booth because we're talking about the Queen of England turning 90 years old. And I, against the better judgment of everyone else on the show, insisted that we talk about her as, I think, the greatest icon of popular culture. That this lady was, like, a gigantic thing before we had electronic media, and then managed to surf on electronic media and basically every step of the way be part of, you know, from like the press to radio to TV to film and the internet, like be all over the place by virtue of her station and having to occupy a real life that is also a media life in a way that we now mostly associate with a half Armenian family from the West Valley. So I will open up by saying, Jamila and Humphrey, like, what are your first memories of this bitch, what was in charge of you, and her public face?
Enormous breasts.
She taped them down. The reason I made us do this topic is that my undergraduate thesis was on media relations in the British royal family. And the most fascinating thing I discovered was that, like, as soon as her dad died and she became queen, she was like, strap these tiggle bitties down.
My God.
A queen can't have whatever these are.
It's like a bottom on her chest. Like, have you ever met her?
I have, yeah.
Yeah.
You guys both met her?
They are gigantic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What the fuck?
All right. Where the fuck was she?
Right. I feel like, Eric,
Jamila,
you need
Jamila,
to calm
down.
I feel like you're going to hit me.
You're welcome to the jungle, baby. Welcome to the jungle.
Go first. How did you meet her?
I met her at an event. She came over to BBC Radio 1, where I was a broadcaster.
Uh-huh.
And she came to see our new renovated British radio station. And just lovely, enormously capacious knockers.
Okay.
Also a nice lady.
How much human being, how much well-operating machine?
I think she just can't be fucked, which I quite like. I think, you know, she's just sort of tolerating everyone.
Yeah.
And I think that makes her a human being. So I'm into that. You know, she's bloody old and she's up and she's out and she's active, like much more so than I am. You know, I sort of exist in a world that just sort of consists of snacking and fucking. And so...
Oh, God, I want to be you. Humphrey.
I first met her, I had tea with her when I was at school. Uh-huh. We had a thing, I went to a very fancy school in England, and there's a tradition every year, a thing called strawberry tea, uh-huh. where some of the boys go up to Windsor Castle and have tea with the Queen, Prince
Fuck
Philip.
Off.
Fuck on.
And so
17.
Was that terrifying, or was it you were a 17-year-old? You were like, oh, this is stupid.
Wait, why did you get? What's the criteria to be chosen for the strawberry tea?
Being extremely posh. Basically, yeah, like
totally
the poshest kids.
Top down.
Yeah. Well, no, I Well, my grandfather was friends with the Queen. He got.
I'm gonna say it's based on who's related to the most bastard children of Stuarts.
Yes, not far off. Yeah, yeah. My grandfather in the Second World War, he was injured very badly. In the last 2 years, he was at Sandringham guarding the Queen. And so his big joke for years afterwards was that he poked the Queen and Princess Margaret on the same evening, but that was in a play. So his gag was, I poked them, and everyone would be frightfully shocked.
Also, everybody fucked Princess Margaret.
Also, everybody fucked Princess Margaret.
I fucked Princess Margaret.
I fucked Princess Margaret.
Okay, but when you were little kids growing up before that, how did you understand this person in your world? She's like on your money and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've just always wondered what, a bit like the Kardashians, like, what does she actually do?
Right.
What is her actual job?
Good question.
Like, what is it? Like,
what is it?
She just goes to events and stuff. Like, it's a lovely life.
Have you read her Wikipedia?
No.
Fascinating read.
I have not.
What is it that she does?
A lot of nothing.
But the thing is, I mean, there's a lot of going and doing official events, touring things, meeting well-bred little boys.
17-year-olds.
But then there's also the thing of, like, a box comes every night with, like, all of the national security information, and she, like, not all of it, but, like, you know, toned down for old lady. But and she, like, is supposed to look at it.
Does
so
she at least
knows. I feel like she does. Like, everyone, she seems to
Somebody's highlighted.
She seems to be well-informed.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it is.
And well-endowed.
It is definitely condensed. As Americans, she is sort of like the encapsulation of, like, what Britishness is.
You guys are definitely much more fascinated with her than we are.
Okay.
Like, I think maybe it's because we take her for granted.
Sure.
Yes.
You know, but perhaps that's what's going
on. We'll miss her when she's gone.
Like, also, like, resent her big house when she doesn't have a job.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
Well, as you said, she is in her defense, she is busier than virtually anyone else in the country.
I honestly legitimately think it will be harder for you guys to maintain a monarchy when it's a dude. It is easier to understand this weird half job when you also understand, like, she's kicking out 4 kids and raising them and taking care of all of that.
Sure.
And maybe Charles will be old enough when it happens that nobody begrudges it of him and he makes enough shortbread cookies that we all think it's okay.
There's talk that they might skip Charles.
They absolutely should.
They won't fucking skip Charles.
Skip Charles. He doesn't want it.
In the fucking,
no, he wants
but
it.
Also,
it's
crazy.
Okay, A, Charles has to pay off all of the dudes who have been treating him well for the past 60 years, and he has to hand out some titles. So he wants it. But, like, in the Netherlands, they will have a lady retire and just go off and live in a house. Not in fucking Britain. Like, when you owned a quarter of the world for a while, you understand you do it till you die. Like, that old lady is real fucked up about, and she's been defining the terms of things since she was 25 years old.
King William for, like, in my lifetime?
I mean, you'll probably see.
Hang on a minute.
All right.
Didn't Prince Charles say over the phone when the, like, Buckingham Palace phones got tapped that to Camilla, on the phone, he said,
he doesn't
want
to be king.
No, he said, I want to be your tampon.
Yes.
So, I'm not how sure can if he that's be... an official ceremony. No,
I'm just asking.
King Henry
was
be both
a dirty
king
bastard.
And a tampon?
King Henry was everybody's tampon.
Is that because he wants to be bigger? I
think he wants to enter her and then get larger, which is the reverse of the traditional system.
It is weird how much in the 80s there was this really rich world of gossip about them.
Yeah.
And then we sort of moved along and have stopped doing that. Do you think it's because they got better at media relations or because we found better people to pay attention
to? They got better at media relations, 100%. I don't know if it's always been this way, but when I was a journalist, the way they operate the communique between the U.S. and the UK is, it's very cordial. Like, they're very lovely to deal with. They're open to invitations. They love giving you access. It just has to be in such a way that they've ascribed to. Like, you just can't do anything, but you get to, they'll fly you out and go to wherever they're going to be, and you can follow them the entire time. I just think they've gotten better, especially since Princess Diana's death, about how they communicate things, because we were at the forefront of the internet when she died, and there was so much information that was being spewed out that they could not control. They didn't want that again.
Throughout the, like, starting in the 60s, they famously had this first documentary. It was like an hour-long TV thing.
Oh, the Panorama.
With the family, yeah. Mm. And it sort of let people in, and at a point in time when there was a lot of chatter about republicanism, it sort of got them good attention, but then people were hungry for more. And they got into this cycle of sort of, like, trying to deliver things on their terms and assuming that that would be enough.
Sure.
And then having people get hungrier and hungrier.
We did that here, too, with the studio system.
Okay, talk about that.
In the 40s and the 50s, they had the studio system, and then and the White House and the News Corps here, they would sort of dole out information as they constructed it and then gave it to you and made you feel like you had access, but you really didn't have any access at all. They just gave you what they knew would actually either sell papers or pop. Yeah.
I feel like Humphrey wants to tell me that I'm wrong.
No, by no means. No, I think they've definitely got way better. They've got more savvy. That's a very modern phenomenon for any, you know, for hundreds of years, being a member of the royal household was pretty much the same thing. You wore like a fabulous velvet outfit and you shot pigs in a forest somewhere. And then more recently, it's become a thing where you need to be careful about what you tweet, what you write, what you text to a friend, because not least of all, because our press loves digging into the text messages of rich and famous people.
Of which we know.
I think it's a little bit of both. But that's one side of it. So I definitely agree with Winch on that. But also, there are more interesting targets out there now.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who are like who are going to put their buttholes directly onto Instagram, and yes. Until Prince
we
Charles
have not
does that,
had our butthole
compete.
On Instagram by a famous person yet.
I've started to wonder if Rihanna's going to do like a bum
just to pull the part cheeks.
On the front cover of her album with like
special.
A spliff sticking out of it.
That'd be amazing.
Smoking it
just
with her arse.
Draw a smiley face.
I mean, the thing
googly
is,
eyes.
Like the attention to these people was because of their position and because it was already attention. And the thing is now that we have people who are hot and hoary, willing to do these things, and talented, and, like, in the fucking game.
Yeah.
Now that we have rich kids of Instagram, you need the royal children less, because the rich kids of Instagram have all the stuff
also,
that they have.
The rich kids of Instagram are way more fun than Prince William and Prince Harry, because although Prince William and Prince Harry do travel in helicopters, they don't, like, take a picture of their gold Rolex while they're in a helicopter and be, like, sick.
Like,
that's my hashtag.
Let us bridge over to media representations. When one of the things I liked most about the King's Speech was that it reminded you that in the 30s for the British royal family, there was still this notion of like, so are the communists going to behead us? I mean, they beheaded most of the rest of our extended family. When are they going to get to us? And that weird pressure of, oh, be worried about it, because if we are too ostentatious, people will get pissed off and throw us out of our nice life, led them to be so middle class and kind of boring. What are your favorite media representations of the British royal family or any kind of like royalty or fanciness?
I think when Princess Diana, once she left Charles, I was 16, 15 when it happened. And I've always loved her growing up. I just always thought that her interest in things that most famous people were like kind of like superficial about was really, especially powerful people, was very compelling. And especially because I love the Brits. I'm Anglophile in that way.
You're welcome.
Thank you. I found her when she would go and tour different countries and be with the sick children. She was the only person who ever did that, more than Audrey fucking Hepburn. I felt like she actually did it with love in her heart and interest in her heart. And we would watch the Princess Trust every year that it was televised. They always had the best performances.
There's a really good French and Saunders sketch where they talk about how generous of spirit Princess Diana is, because she actually touches those poor people.
I remember that episode.
And I feel like we are able to be more appreciative of it because we don't actually have to deal with those people. Like, they are concepts to us, where if I really did have a condescending nice lady coming in and touching me because I was poor, just had to like see that on the news, like it mattered, I might be whole lot more.
You also have to understand, not only that, I don't know if you guys were still in the UK when this was going on, but we only knew about her on the societal level when she came to town. So there was like a picture of her with like Elton John, Tupac.
No, you're not talking about Princess Diana.
Yes,
right?
I am.
Tupac was around with Princess Diana?
Yes.
Okay.
And Versace. And
she's the one who shot him.
Yeah, that's what they say.
He didn't know. I remember looking at the picture and it was in Vibe. And I remember thinking, fuck, Princess Diana has always been cool, but she is dope. She had dinner with Tupac.
She also danced at the White House with John Travolta. And she did walk across a minefield, for which she is a legend.
She is badass. Rest in peace.
She was great in her way. I am Team Kate all the way. Kate will never die in a tunnel in Paris because she is sophisticated enough about media
enough to not use under eyeliner.
I find it amazing that despite the fact the way that Diana died because of the psychotic paparazzi, mm-hmm. that it, the problem hasn't just gone away. It's worse uh-huh. in
is
society
it
now. Like
it's completely different.
Not in Paris, but the like all over the world. It's like we've learned nothing.
Like California, right. California was recently trying to pass that law that would
it went by.
Increase. I thought that it was passed. It's not legal. We have a fucking First Amendment in this country. You can't
get that close with them.
I mean,
anymore.
The thing is you cannot say that the type of journalism that's happening affects the criminal penalty on something. It's a violation of the First Amendment, and I kind of support that. I think, you know, if you're somebody, all of us have pushed ourselves into the public eye in one way or another, and if other people want to come and look at us because of that, their right to do so is increased.
I never stopped getting bothered by the paparazzi. I was photographed on my way in here.
The thing is I've always maintained...
I'm talking about the psychotic, like, chasing of people that causes car accidents.
See, I can say...
There was a death
say,
with Bruce Jenner involved last year because he was getting away from the paparazzi.
I can say, which Jamila maybe can't say...
He was on his phone, though.
She gets hassled a bunch in the UK, right?
Oh, really?
Is that fair to say?
A bit.
I didn't mean to be dickish about it, I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I didn't think you were dickish.
No, I know. And I don't know whether that was a weird move on my part to step in and say that on
your part.
No,
I get a little
so
bit
much
of
politeness in here.
At one point, I gained the weight of a small child. not that small a child. I gained about 70 pounds because I was on medication for asthma and it made me eat my house and my family and all of the cars on my street. I got tormented by the paparazzi a lot for that. And then after that, it was just they became obsessed.
Did they put you in Grazia or Hello or OK?
All of them. A picture just of my bottom, basically.
I mean,
on the front cover of them.
Being a woman, being an attractive woman in the media, like, does lead to a lot of dudes who don't understand boundaries and a lot of people having a lot of opinions about your body. It is
a bit scary to have eight strange men that you don't know, any one of which could be a stalker just if he buys a big camera. That's a bit strange.
And there is actually something kind of neat about the fact that we have not had
a murder. A pap murder.
I was going to say a girl in the royal family since Princess Anne that nobody's had to be an awkward 13-year-old girl. I mean, I guess you have Prince Andrew's daughters?
Yeah, Beatrice. I can say Beatrice and Eugenie. Yeah. Although they have blossomed into very sophisticated, beautiful young women.
We saw nothing of them.
Go through
I think Fergie, like, we had like a late awkward
when she broke up with Andrew, she went cray-cray.
I like Fergie, though.
She's accessible.
Me too.
All right.
Very fond of her.
But let's go back to media representation.
Yes.
Is there any media representation of...
Well, I this is an oblique way to come at this topic, but the recent BBC adaptation of War and Peace, I thought was a really fascinating look into the lives of royalty of that period, you know, of the sort of 1800s, around the time our royal family had to sort of start scaling back on how bananas they were.
Yeah.
And, you know, in Russia and France and all those places, when you go to Paris and you go to the Tuileries Palace or you go to Versailles or whatever, you can understand why their people rose up and shot their heads off. And when you go to Buckingham Palace, it's crazy, but it's slightly more restrained.
Versailles.
Yes.
I was talking about Versailles the other day because I was watching Marie Antoinette, the Sofia Coppola version. And, you know, having gone to Versailles, I went all up in there.
Yeah.
And it was mostly bedrooms and places to dance and eat.
Yeah.
And there was a chapel.
That sounds delightful.
It was delightful. But I was also saying, like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, what is the, where's the war room? Like, where's the meeting room?
The whole point.
Where are the books?
The whole point is to get, was for Louis to get all of his nobles in one place where they were fucking and trying to fuck each other so that they would not be doing any sort of politicking that might get in the way of him doing his
stuff. And that's
Snoop
precisely
Dogg's
why
house.
They went nuts. Exactly
the same.
Just less weed.
Jamila.
420.
Is there?
Today.
As a Brit of color, when you are thinking about this whole game, what's the level of, like, I'm having to pay attention to these people because they stole my country for a couple of hundred years?
I mean, I'd like to see some more brown in the royal family. That's something definitely like to see.
Denmark has now, like, some little Asian princes running around because a dude married an Asian
lady.
Absolutely. And it, like, you've gotten a fair number of, like, like life peers of color, but you know hereditary peers.
I mean, I'm not mad at the royal family because this was all before my time and their time, all of this shit going down. So I think that's a bit like being angry at like Berliners now for what happened during the war.
There's one peer of color I can think of.
A hereditary peer?
I think it is the Duchess of Athol. Is non-white.
Oh, really?
Now, that's what an appalling thing to say. I can't specifically say what her ethnicity
is. Non-white?
I think she is Asian.
A person of color.
In some way. Yes, that's probably that is certainly the correct way of putting it.
So British.
I'm foreign and ghastly.
There is, in Spain, they had a lesbian duchess, and her wife totally got to take her title. It was super exciting.
Fab.
Jamila, any media representations, fictional or non-fictional, of royalty that, like, to you were fun or interesting or compelling?
I don't know. For some reason, I can't seem to think. I liked Emily Blunt.
Oh, in The Young Victoria.
I enjoyed her in The Young Victoria. I like her. I also liked Jonathan Rhys-Meyers as Henry VIII.
Oh, yes. The Tudors was really nice. I mean, it gave a nice sexy feel, and it was nice having sort of like a not fat and gouty Henry VIII to get excited
dirty
about.
Dirty little bastard. It was wonderful.
Yeah. Winter, what about you?
I think I'm thinking of Anne of a Thousand Days.
With Jean-Pierre Bujold?
Yes. They showed that to us in school, and I was really, really, really... Anything about Henry VIII has always been... I've been obsessed with him, because I was obsessed with the fact that he was...
He's a problem solver.
He was.
Not only that, is he had big shit that he was dealing with. Yeah. That he was sort of, you know, dealing with the church and everything. He had things that he should have been doing. But there's a certain focus, at least from a U.S. perspective, that was always on his sexual habits and his eating habits and his girth and his waistband.
His girth, as in his...
No, we don't know how big his penis was.
Oh, right.
We can only speculate.
I would hope that it was as big, considering how many bitches he
was. I don't know. I think he beheaded people because he didn't want it to get out that he was very small.
Oh, please.
It was shooting blanks.
That's what I would do.
Digging people down. Henry VIII was sort of my favorite. Anybody who ever played Henry VIII, especially the PBS version, I forget who that was, but I loved him.
I think it's weird that Helen Mirren has decided to take a quarter of her career and just play the same lady over and over again.
Yeah.
But fuck it if, like, the Queen was in a really, really interesting look into, like, a key moment in media relations and this person, like, having to, not unlike RuPaul, constantly update herself for the world that she lives in. Like, RuPaul on Drag Race the other day referred to people finding sex on Craigslist. And it was this terrifying moment of, like, will RuPaul get old and get out of touch? And the Queen has gotten out of touch 1,000 times. And, like, one of the reasons I wanted to do this was just sort of listening to the Beatles song, like, Her Majesty's a Very Nice Girl or whatever it is, and realizing, like, she's been this weird blip in pop culture since then, and she's had to, like... figure out a person to be the whole way along.
Yeah.
And, you know, she has mastered the situation with Easter egg colored coats and hats, but it's done
nice
work.
And those titties.
You know what?
And those titties.
Princess Diana dying was the first time we saw her. She was, if I remember, she wasn't emotional. So that was the first time, again, that America saw people in crisis that we're not normally accustomed to. And with her not emoting something for someone who was so beloved, it was a moment where we were just like, dude,
well, it's this
fucking
little,
drop a tear, bitch.
It's this girl who had to learn to be strong for World War II, learning that she needed to cry on cue when she's a fucking human being and not an actress, and you people have your weird relationship with emotions.
We do.
Will the monarchy outlast Her Majesty by 50 years?
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. I mean, like, the arguments against it are many and very reasonable.
It's great for tourism.
But what it boils down to is part of the monarch is a central part of what makes up the British Constitution. Like, you require a monarch and a
ceremonial role. We're not talking about politics here.
No,
fuck your Walter Badgett.
Okay.
We are talking at this point in time about media, because that's what she will live
also,
or die
Kate
by.
Also, Kate Middleton. She's becoming a style icon.
Yeah, everyone loves her.
This is a big deal.
I fear that we will turn
so
on her.
I'm so anti it.
But I feel
of
like...
We'll
no, I think she's... I think, yeah, I can understand that you would find her a little bit bland.
But the Hogwarts of it...
She wears clothes from Zara.
Yeah.
So that's
which
very,
I'm okay with, but I don't like the under
she's
eyeliner.
Very street.
Jamila.
Yes.
Will the monarchy outlast Her Majesty by 50 years?
Definitely. Yeah, I don't think that she's the she's any longer... Also, oh God, if Harry somehow... by some way becomes the king, it's going to be so fun in England I can't even tell you. He's such. Yeah. It's just going to be Calvin one Harris. Big orgy. Prince. Everyone's going to be naked at the
Jamila,
airport as soon as you arrive.
Have you at all
it's going to be fantastic.
Taken a Saturday in London and just focused all of yourself on getting on that dick. Have you ever just said
On any dick?
On Harry.
Specifically on Harry's. No, I don't have any interest in his dick. I love him for his mind.
Yeah.
There you go. Very refreshing. Oh. His modern day objectification.
Winter.
Yes, I do think that'll happen.
Colin.
That I'm going to get onto Harry's dick.
Sure, you're gorgeous.
Lovely. I don't think I'm his type.
Colin, will they be beheaded or die in flames?
In public.
They'll survive. They'll keep going.
They will survive.
Colin's a filthy red. Don't listen to him.
He wears that Billy Bragg shirt all of the time.
All the time.
All right, you guys are listening to Pop Rocket. Thank you for enduring this topic that I wanted so much. We will be right back after this.
Carrie, close your eyes.
Okay.
In the future, when I utter the word canceled, everything which I have said to you while you are in a therapy session will have no force with you. Let's go to the earliest moment of pain or discomfort.
Ross, I don't think I want to do Scientology auditing.
I understand. The only way is through.
I don't really like Scientology, Ross.
That's too bad, because we have a show called Oh No, Ross and Carrie. If people are going to learn all about Scientology, I'm afraid you're going to have to go through the auditing process.
Is it going
to
be just like this?
Yep, for like 5 hours at a time.
Why did we start making a show?
We're masochists.
Oh, okay.
Canceled.
Welcome back to Pop Rocket. I'm your host, Guy Branum. With me in the studio are...
Winter Mitchell.
Jamila Jamil.
Humphrey Carr.
And every week, Humphrey, on Pop Rocket, we ask our panel, what's your jam? Humphrey Carr.
Yeah.
What is your current jam?
My current jam is a song called The Stable Song by Gregory Alan Isakov. It's a nice piece of sort of charming, melodic, indie guff for white guys.
Let's hear it.
It's guff.
Whitest person we've had in this booth in a long time.
That's me.
Ring like clear day.
Oh, you can imagine someone being fingered to this song. Kind of.
Big time. Hopefully me.
Humphrey, I would like to note that banjos are part of my culture, and you're not allowed to just appropriate that left and right.
Sorry.
So why do you like boring music?
I think it's because I'm such an explosive person in real life myself. I need to be brought down a notch by music I listen to.
You just want to hear sad people talk about how they loved once in Montreal and it will never happen again?
Yeah, pretty much.
It's understandable. But you're like a deep nerd in other ways. Do you use boring person music, like boring regular Brooklyn guy music, to mask yourself against excessive scrutiny as a nerd?
That's a very real possibility. I mean, I would say I have an eclectic taste in music because almost everything on my iPods is movie soundtracks. So you just get a spread of all sorts of stuff.
Do you have Gone Girl?
Do I have...
Gone Girl?
No. Is it good?
Yeah.
All right. I'll check it out.
My obligatory Ben Affleck reference.
Was that like Philip Glass?
No, that was... Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Jamila.
Yes.
What is your current jam?
It's called Genocide, and it's by... it sounds darker than it is. It's actually a very
Compton
light,
soundtrack.
Fun song. Yes, it's Kendrick Lamar featuring on Dr. Dre's album, and it's very fun and good with the windows down and very loud.
Somebody played this really loud at a party this weekend, and it sounded perfect.
Why do you love it, Jamila?
I like it because I am a big old nerd as well, and what I like to do is I like to hide in big, rowdy, loud, fierce music. Also, I disagree with like misogyny and things, but there's something about like sort of like heavy, misogynistic, sort of inappropriate, angry rap that really appeals to me.
Like,
and, like it's like a guilty pleasure, not Chris Brown. He's also not macho. He's yeah. Anyone who has to beat on women is a very large vagina.
It sucks that he has a big cock.
Chris Brown does.
How do you know?
There was a picture that floated. It just sucks.
But has he done like a Kourtney Kardashian where he's airbrushed it?
No. To make it look different. It was his dick. I will never forget it.
I'd recognize that dick anywhere.
I'd recognize that dick anywhere. I know a big dick when I see one.
All right. Winter Mitchell, what is your jam?
You know, there was a lot of good music this weekend, but I, you know, going to the Calvin Harris show, I don't like EDM, period. But I did like the movement and the energy that it creates in people. And I say this as a person who was only drunk on emotion and alcohol, nothing more. So this one is Do You Remember, the Strange Remix by Jared James. It's a new one. It's fabulous. I love this song. All quadrants. All of it. I might add four more.
That sounds like a level of Silver Surfer for the NES.
You are so rude.
I'm a Christian.
He's very rude about my choice as well.
I'm not a nice
person.
How
do you feel about my choice?
I really liked yours.
I went.
Yeah,
I went.
Suspiciously quiet.
He never likes anything that I play, so that's fine.
I have terrible taste in music. So
I resent that.
I was going to not have a jam, but a former panelist on the show decided to, like, intervene herself into this panel and make it so that I had to have a jam. Specifically, I recently on Facebook recounted a situation, like, I once had the Flash Gordon theme song as a jam on the show, but I was, like, recounting on Facebook that as a little boy, I really liked the Flash Gordon soundtrack. My uncle had an 8-track of it, and I like climbed up on the stereo to find out what it was, because I learned, like, at that point in time, I was really into, if you know the name of something, you can ask for it. My mom caught me doing it, and she asked why, and I said that I liked the Flash Gordon theme song, and then she explained to me that there was something very, very bad about the lead singer of the group that sang the Flash Gordon theme song, and so I should not like them. And so I would, like, sleep in my bunk bed and I would sing it to myself, but I would feel really, really guilty for it. But it was only last week that it crossed my mind that I could just buy it for myself because I'm an adult. I posted that on Facebook, and one of my many beloved comedy daughters, Riley Silverman, a young lady who is not unfamiliar with having constructions of gender that don't apply to you applied to her, said that she very deeply wanted to get me the Flash Gordon soundtrack, and I said, oh, I already bought it on iTunes, and I'm holding here in my hands a brand new on vinyl copy of the Flash Gordon theme song that I can enjoy in real 1980s style. So, Christian, can we get some?
Lovely.
So thank you, Riley Jess Silverman, for paying tribute to the real Queen of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, Freddie Mercury. You've been listening to Pop Rocket, hosted by me, Guy Branum, with Winter Mitchell. Jamila Jamil, thank you so much for being here. You're
thank
a
you
goddamn delight. I'm a big fan. And Humphrey, who I knew was a delight previously. And thank you very much for doing this and seeing me in a situation where absolutely no multi-sided dice were involved. Or non-traditionally sided dice. We post our show notes every week at MaximumFun.org, and you can also find links in the episode description of this podcast. Our theme music is Party Booby Trap by Ozzy Mizo. Thanks to him for letting us use it. Thanks to Daisy Chief, Charlie Cluster 7, Lulu 2, and Disco Rock Opera for the 5-star reviews on iTunes. That's a solid number. I would like to see more next week. If you haven't already, please review us. If you've got an opinion you want to share about this week's topics, you can join the conversation on our Facebook group or tweet at us. We're at Pop Rocket. We are a production of MaximumFun.org, and our producer is the easily excitable Christian Duenas, who just got hired full-time at Max Fun. Congratulations. Oh, and finally, I'm sorry to hold you guys for just another moment. There's a brand new and exciting podcast here at Maximum Fun, Jesse Thorne was telling everybody that we needed to like talk about it and pay attention to it and all of that. And is the Beef and Dairy Network. And I legit thought that Jesse had acquired an agricultural news podcast. Like, I grew up on a farm. I grew up where if you woke up early enough in the morning, there were people on television talking about what the crop report was going to be. And I was like, I guess he knows what he's doing. And then I listened to it and I was wrong. It is a delightful, fake Beef and Dairy podcast. So you should listen to it if you enjoy comedy and fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.